Application intake and deadlines are set by each department, so contact your department supervisor today. Application intake and deadlines are set by each department, so contact your department or supervisor today. Access the website to learn more, queensu.ca/VPR/resources/undergraduate. For general inquiries, contact Tracy Allen at allent@queensu.ca.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Good evening, it's 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Juliana Gonsalves. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie. Let's start off with your local news headlines. An Indigenous arts organization is looking to the future of Lemoyne Point Farm. After Kingston City Council finalized its $12 million purchase of the property at their last meeting, Lodgepole Arts Alliance, a national charitable nonprofit supporting Indigenous artists across the country, has been advocating for the protection of the site while also advancing a vision to transform it into a publicly accessible Indigenous-led cultural space. In 2024, the organization officially announced plans to establish a land-based studio complex for culture and creativity in the Kingston region. Executive Director Terry Lynn Brennan says that the vision was born out of a gap identified not only in Ontario, but across the country.
There really isn't a publicly accessible, Indigenous-owned, operated, programmed space that has been designed and built from the ground up that isn't on reserve land. As I said, there isn't a public space.
Brennan says the group identified Lemoyne Point Farm as an ideal fit for that vision.
It became a search for a place that would be encompassing of all the options that our ancestors used to engage in, so traditional agricultural food growth, water travel, hunting and forestry, initiation with old forests, not that we would be hunting, but just having those surroundings, those natural surroundings that our ancestors were used to. And when Lemoyne Point Farm came up, it just kind of ticked all the boxes that we had been in search for over 2 years for the perfect property. And ironically, that was one that really drew us in over 2 years ago, and we began conversations over 2 years ago to start to envision what this Indigenous art studio complex could be like, and specifically on that property.
Over the past 2 years, Lodgepole Arts has been in discussions with the city about potentially acquiring the land at cost, with a commitment to preserve and maintain it as a public space. Now, with the city's purchase complete, Brennan says they're optimistic those conversations will continue. She adds that early discussions with the city, community organizations, and local partners have been encouraging, with more engagement on the way.
And we feel that our objectives are very much aligned with everything that both the public and the private organizations surrounding the farm and its saving, preserving nature agree with. Our vision is very much to basically utilize the 12 current footprints of buildings on the property. We have no intention to expand those buildings, the footprint of those buildings, because we are a land-based artistic organization, so we want to preserve as much land as possible. But we will take those buildings and utilize them to the best of our ability through Indigenous engagement, through Indigenous contractors and engineers. We currently have created a project where we have hired two row consultants out of Six Nations to come to the community in early April, actually, and do some consultation, public consultation conversations on the vision of what Lodgepole's art space, you know, arts studio complex could look like and should look like for this area, while keeping in mind the environmental needs and conditions of the landscape. And we will use Lemoyne Point Farm as our example of it when we get that property. I'm told to say when, not if. I'm told to say when, how that would look. We're hoping that it's a win-win-win for the community, for the council, and certainly for the regional Indigenous communities and Indigenous artists from across the country, to continue conversations, to continue with public consultations as well, to ensure that this type of space that we envision is one that's welcomed in the area, and one that the community can see to, as you know, and be proud of. And certainly bring more Indigenous artistry from all facets of the country to this current space of Gatta Rockway. It's a beautiful area, and so we're just very anticipatory to continue conversations with the city and council at this stage.
As part of the process, Lodgepole Arts is inviting the community to help shape this vision. A public talking circle will be held on Wednesday, April 8th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Memorial Hall in City Hall, with an earlier session from noon to 3 for Indigenous community members.
Two-row architects out of Six Nations will be leading that, a group that we are very excited to be working with, and hoping that they can help use their immense background and expertise in feasibility and looking at landscapes as potential building spaces to support the conversations here in Kingston and also across the country with artists to envision what is most needed, most desired.
And ideas for the space are already beginning to take shape.
We're very excited about taking the barn, for instance, and transforming it into a modern theater in the round, as well as a gallery space, and taking, you know, any one of the other footprint buildings and turning it into a culinary studio, a dance studio, a weaving studio, a sculpting studio. We will also take care of the two historic buildings that are on the property, and try and keep them as rooted in their ancestral history as possible. They're beautiful limestone buildings, and knowing a little bit about that history is important to us as well. But we will also take the agricultural land that's owned that, and we would like to grow our own foodstuffs and recalibrate that soil and that need to replenish the earth. And we've talked to Highway 15 Gardens about helping to support some of those initiatives, because everybody's got their gifts, and we certainly want to try and work with all those that we know have those special gifts, not just artistry, but land, ecology, climate, the same with preserving the waterfront shoreline and honing that up. And then the old growth forest, we want to try and get rid of invasives and nurture the those trees that are in there that really have been lost across this part of the whole continent, really, and revitalize that old growth.
For now, while council stated at their last meeting that no decisions are being made in the near future, Lodgepole Arts is continuing to work towards their vision of an Indigenous arts and culture hub in Kingston.
It's such a positive step that we're at right now, and I'm trying to keep myself and everybody else calm, although I struggle with not getting too excited about the potential and the possibilities, not only for the community of Kingston, but for all of the Indigenous artists that I know across this country that are very excited about the potential of the Lodgepole vision coming to reality here in Gatta Rockway.
Kingston researchers are leading the country with a first-of-its-kind study that's reshaping how we understand shoulder movement. A team of researchers from Kingston Health Sciences Center and Smith Engineering at Queen's University have used advanced imaging technology to challenge long-held assumptions about how the shoulder functions. Work that could help improve rehabilitation, injury prevention, and surgical treatment. The study, published in the Journal of Biomechanics, was conducted at the Skeletal Observation Lab at KHSC's Hotel Deer Hospital site, a joint initiative of Smith Engineering and the KHSC Research Institute. Using a specialized X-ray system, researchers were able to track bone movement in real time, offering a level of precision not previously possible in Canada. CFRC sat down with lead author and former PhD student in Smith Engineering, Aaron Lee, to learn more. What made this study unique compared to previous research in this area?
Okay, yes. So kind of the traditional method in biomechanics for measuring motion of joints is often used based on using markers that are placed on the skin. So you may be familiar with this from actually film, such as Avatar, where they put reflective markers on the skin, and then they use that to estimate how the skeleton is moving beneath it. However, you can imagine for joints like the ankle or specifically the shoulder, like in this study, our bones move quite a bit underneath the skin. So if you feel your shoulder blade on the back of your shoulder and you lift your arm, you can feel that it's moving quite a bit underneath the skin. So we lose a lot of accuracy when we try to estimate how it's moving from markers on the skin. And so this technology we have at the Skeletal Observation Lab is called biplanar X-ray. And so it uses two X-ray sources that we pulse at 60 hertz, so 60 pulses a second. And so this allows us to directly measure how the bones are moving in 3D. And so that's really what's unique about it, is it gets us highly accurate measurement of the bones. And so this was the first time we've used this technology in the shoulder in Canada. There are only two systems here in the University of Calgary. And so others in the past have absolutely studied the shoulder using this technology, but most of those studies have been focused to just looking at how the arm moves when you're raising your arm. However, for the first time, we wanted to see how the bones managed a different loading on the shoulder, so different forces. And so what was unique about this study, first of all, is the technology that we used, but then also how we studied the shoulder while it was both doing a push and a pull task to see how the joint managed that different loading configuration.
Yeah, thank you for the background on what makes this such a first. This study also challenges some long-held assumptions. What was the prevailing belief about shoulder movement before this, and what did you find?
Right, of course. So I also just want to preface in saying that, you know, this is one study of many to come. And so it's just kind of one small piece of the puzzle that's contributing to what else is out there. But like I said, most of the previous studies have only looked at specifically the shoulder blade. So that scapula bone is what we call it, how it moves when somebody is raising their arm. And so a lot of assumptions about what healthy motion of the scapula looks like has been based just at looking at that one loading configuration. And so, for example, this is used in the clinic often, where if a physiotherapist sees the scapula is moving in a way that's perceived as being unhealthy, then it might be something that they try to correct. And so what our study did is we tried to give a broader characterization of what healthy scapula motion really looks like. And so what was a little bit different is we found that in previous work, it's been assumed that having more rotation of the scapula is really good for enabling good joint mechanics or good healthy function when you're raising your arm. But what we found is actually relative to when you pull your arm down, you actually have a little bit less of that rotation. And so basically the big finding of the study was that perhaps it isn't just always more rotation is better. There might actually be a trade-off that enables good joint stability and good motion overall for the shoulder.
Mm-hmm. And this was a very collaborative study. This project brought together Kingston Health Sciences Center and Smith Engineering at Queen's. How did that partnership and cross-disciplinary collaboration kind of shape the study?
Yeah, so our lab, the Skeletal Observation Lab, is based in Hotel Dieu Hospital, which is a part of the Kingston Health Sciences Center. So it's definitely been supported by a lot of wonderful people in the KHSC, especially to do with, you know, getting set up around radiation safety, dealing with management around the space in the hospital, as well as some collaboration with surgeons. So yeah, it's been a really nice collaboration between the mechanical engineering department, as well as the great people at KHSC.
And moving forward, how do you think these findings could impact both future research and care?
Yeah, so I think future research, absolutely. So what we're doing with this study is we looked at only healthy shoulder motion. And we think that this is really important because to understand basically what's going wrong with an unhealthy shoulder, we need to understand what's going right in a healthy shoulder to try to correct back to it. So this is kind of in this knowledge to action framework where we call it, where we're in the lab collecting knowledge, and then how is this going to lead for action in the clinic? We're kind of early on in that stage because the shoulder is so understudied that we really need to get this good basis of healthy shoulder motion first. So for one, it's going to inform future research that we can use to then look into people with shoulder pathologies. So for example, people with rotator cuff tears, which is the tearing of the tendon and the muscles that help stabilize the joint. It can help to inform future research about osteoarthritis in the shoulder and so on. But then even just the study of characterizing healthy shoulder motion, I think that, clinicians can think about this in the clinic already, and that when we're trying to correct what's considered like an unhealthy joint motion to something that's more healthy, we can use this information to understand kind of the variability in what a healthy shoulder does look like. But of course, this is really just a first step of many more to come.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. You are listening to your Queen's Campus Beat, Queen's Campus News here on CFRC 101.9 FM or online at cfrc.ca. New financial figures released at the Alma Mater Society's Corporate Annual General Meeting on March 24th show the organization is running a deficit of approximately $852,000 for the period between May 1st, 2025 and January 31st, 2026. According to AMS Vice President of Operations, the shortfall significantly exceeds earlier projections by more than $300,000. According to the AMS, a major contributor is the reopening of the Queen's Pub, which accounts for roughly $570,000 of the deficit. The pub had originally been expected to generate a surplus, but shifting student spending habits and competition with off-campus venues have reduced revenues. The updated figures suggest that earlier financial planning relied on outdated pre-pandemic data, raising concerns about how student services will be funded moving forward. Also at the AMS Assembly meeting on March 24th, student representatives addressed multiple governance concerns, including reforms to the student fee referendum system, a broad issue affecting campus inclusion. The meeting included a presentation from the Queen's University Muslim Student Association, where their Director of External Affairs spoke about the ongoing impact of Islamophobia and identified barriers faced by Muslim students on campus. These concerns include inconsistent halal food labeling in dining halls and limited access to appropriate prayer spaces following campus renovations. Assembly members have also discussed how referendum procedures could be made more accessible and transparent, indicating that governance reforms are likely to remain a key issue in the coming academic year. In broader Kingston news, notably in the city's downtown core, The Mansion, the restaurant and music venue, has closed after 17 years in operation, with the announcement made earlier in March on the 11th via social media. Reporting later in the month indicates that the closure came without advance notice to many employees and community members, leaving staff, student groups, and performers uncertain about next steps. The venue had served as both a hospitality space and a live music hub, making it a significant part of the local student and arts community. Its closure reflects ongoing instability in the hospitality sector, particularly for independent venues navigating rising costs and shifting post-pandemic demands. In other news, a Queen's University researcher has received national funding to advance new work on cystic fibrosis, a genetic disease that primarily affects the lungs and digestive system. Assistant Professor Dr. Lucia Lee from the Department of Chemistry has been awarded support through a Cystic Fibrosis Innovation Research Grant Program, which distributes funding across early-stage projects nationwide. Her research focuses on developing molecular strategies that could address the underlying dysfunction of the CFTR protein, which is responsible for regulating fluid movements in cells. While existing treatments attempt to repair this protein, Lee's work explores alternative approaches that could open new directions for treatment and development. You've been listening to your Queen's Campus Beat, Queen's Campus News, here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
The 2026 edition of the Queen's University Athletics and Recreation Color Awards were held late last week in the main gym of the Athletics and Recreation Center. The Color Awards recognize outstanding accomplishments on both the club and team level. Starting with the varsity clubs, the Queen's cheerleading team was recognized with the Award of Merit as the Varsity Club of the Year. 2025-26 was a historic season for Queen's Cheer, who took home a national title alongside the National Judges' Choice Award. Nathan Duffer Calder took home the Jack Jarvis Trophy as the top male athlete amongst varsity clubs for his contributions to the university's sailing team. Abby Lee of Queen's Lacrosse was awarded the Marion Ross Trophy as the top female clubs athlete. Night 2 put the focus on varsity teams. Jude Wheeler D of Queen's Cross Country was the Outstanding Performance of the Year recipient following a career season for the cross country and track teams. Wheeler D was named the OUA Cross Country Male Runner of the Year and was an integral member of the National Champion Cross Country Team. He also won 2 gold medals as a distance runner at the U Sports Track and Field Championships in the 1500 and 3000 meter events. Internationally, Wheeler D won a gold medal in the 1500 meter event at the Junior Pan American Championships while representing Canada in the summer of 2025, setting a new meet record. Quote, Jude will graduate from Queen's as its greatest male distance and middle distance athlete, said Queen's cross country and distance track head coach Mark Bomba. Queen's football defensive back Ashton Miller Melanson took home the Jenkins Trophy as the Varsity Male Athlete of the Year, a fitting result for one of the most prolific players in Queen's football's 140-year history. Miller Melanson ended his 5-year tenure with the Gaels as a 4-time OUA All-Star and a 2-time All-Canadian, and his final career interception total was 22, the most in program history. Miller Melanson was drafted by the Calgary Stampeders in the 2025 CFL Draft and will be heading out west to begin his professional football career. The 2025 Gaels football team won the Jim Tate Award as the top overall varsity team. This comes on the heels of their historic Yates Cup victory over the number one ranked seed in the country, the Laurier Golden Hawks. This Yates Cup win was the first in 16 years and gave the football team a chance to play in the Mitchell Bowl against the Saskatchewan Huskies. They would ultimately lose that game by a score of 22-11. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We begin with Monday, April 6th, daytime high of 5 degrees, but it's going to feel closer to 1 with a 55% chance of precipitation late in the evening into early Tuesday morning, which means we could see up to a centimeter of snow hitting the ground here in early April. Tuesday, April 7th, daytime high of 2 degrees, but it's going to feel right around 0. Chilly conditions ahead. Wednesday, April 8th, we are going to have a beautiful sunny day here in the city of Kingston. It's going to be cold, but that sunshine will make what normally is a 3-degree day feel closer to 6 degrees. Thursday, April 9th, we're back to that lovely spring weather. Daytime high of 13 degrees in the forecast with just a 25% chance of precipitation. We're going to see mostly cloudy conditions and there will be a decent amount of wind blowing, but still much preferable to what we had. Friday, April 10th, daytime high of 10 degrees with a 65% chance of precipitation, feeling closer to 6 degrees because of the rain. Saturday, April 11th, this is more like it. 14 degrees, mix of sun and cloud. It's going to be a gorgeous spring day. And that's going to follow up into Sunday, March 12th, another double-digit day, 13 with a mostly sunny condition. And starting off next week, Monday, April 13th, we've got a 13-degree day with lots of sun in the forecast. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week, and just bear in mind, winter overnight street parking restrictions have been lifted as of April 1st. We begin with two long-term road closures. Berry Street to Queen is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. And Aberdeen Street from Johnson to William is closed indefinitely to accommodate construction activity and staging in the area. We have some short-term road closures as well, including Wright Crescent at Palace Road, which is closed for a contractor to complete roadway repairs, pedestrian safety and access improvements, and traffic calming features on Wright Crescent. There is a minimal traffic disruption on Bath Road to Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard. Expect delays for the installation of intersection pedestrian signals. The city is installing intersection pedestrian signals at several locations to make it easier and safer for pedestrians to cross busy roads. They are installing these signals at the following intersections: Bath Road at Lafleur Park, Concession Street at Kings Court Avenue, and Stephen Street at Patrick Street. And that's a wrap for your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Safe driving, everybody.
Looking for something to do this week? This is Christina Laurie coming back with K-Town's hottest events and concerts coming up this week, starting with events. Once this show wraps up, be sure to head to karaoke at Timeout Bar starting at 6 p.m., followed by Lindy Hop Swing Dance lessons at the J-Duck in Wallace Hall at 7. Trivia fans can head to One Eye Jack's at 7 and the Brass Pub at 7:45, or Something in the Water Brewing at 8. Tomorrow on Tuesday, April 7th, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 to 5 in Springer Market Square. There's also a Makers Meetup at the Broom Factory at 4 and 10,000 Hours at the Kingston Grand Theatre at 7:30. On Wednesday, April 8th, Weekly Board Games Night takes place at the Royal Canadian Legion at 6, along with karaoke at Timeout Bar, also at 6. Trivia at Daft Brewing starts at 7, and karaoke continues at the Grad Club at 8. On Thursday, April 9th, the Kingston Public Market returns from 8:30 to 5. In the evening, check out Drag Bingo at Daft Brewing, kicking off at 7. There is no shortage of trivia on Thursday, with trivia at Riverhead at 7, the Grad Club at 8, Something in the Water at 8, and Queen's Pub at 9. Karaoke runs at Jersey's at 8:30 and The Buckle at 9. Plus, the Urban Music Social takes place at La Vida Bistro Bar at 9:30. On Friday, April 10th, a quick and cute scrapbook and card class happens at the Tet Center at 6. Trivia takes place at Wild Wings Kingston at 7. And Spring Awakening hits the Thousand Islands Playhouse in Gananoque at 7:30. Getting into the weekend on Saturday, April 11th, the Kingston Public Market comes back from 8:30 to 5. And if you want to add another shopping stop to your day, the Kingston Botanical Market takes place at the Tet Center from 10 to 3. In the evening, there's a roller skating night at Golden Links Hall in Harrowsmith at 6:30. On Sunday, April 12th, to wrap up the week, the Memorial Center Farmers Market runs from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. A needle-felted landscape workshop takes place at the Tet Center from 10 to 4:30. For those who don't want the weekend to end too soon, karaoke wraps up the night at the Merchant at 8 and keeps going at the Toucan at 10:30. Now getting into your concerts coming up this week. Tonight, the Morning Doves play Musiki at 8 p.m. Tuesday, April 7th, Tom's Tunes Day Happy Hour Jam kicks off at the RCHA at 4. Eric Urin and Megan Bullo perform at the Coven at 5, and there's an open mic at Musiki at 8. Wednesday, April 8th, DJ Great White spins at Hotel Wolf Island at 4, followed by Sean McCullough at the Coven at 5. The Deep Dark Woods with O'Green will also be playing the Broom Factory at 7:30. On Thursday, April 9th, a midday performance takes place at St. George's Cathedral at 12:15 with Mellow's Choir and Period Instruments, Serene Sounds of the Renaissance. Lauren Carson plays the Coven at 5, Cancer Bats and Guests hit the Broom Factory at 6:30, and Jeff Dunn performs at the RCHA at 7. Friday, April 10th is a packed night for music. Here's just a few. Not Guilty, Ali Pester, and Ken Jameson perform at the RCHA at 4. Micah Garvin plays the Toucan at 5. The Red Handed at Timeout at 6. Lucas Oak at the Loaf and Ale at 7. And Heatwave returns to the RCHA at 8. Then the Oreos close out the night at the Merchant at 10:30. On Saturday, April 11th, Dead Root Revival and the Millwrights play at the Broom Factory starting at 7. The Kingston Symphony presents Under Paris Skies with Jill Barber at the Grand Theatre at 7:30, alongside the SOS ABBA Experience at the Spire. Tiny Horse performs at Signal Brewery at 8, and Guilty Pleasures take the stage at Tiernanog at 9. On Sunday, April 12th, closing out the week, a youth open mic happens at the Broom Factory at 1, followed by Dawson Gray and Connor Wicklum at 7:30. Castle, Sweetleaf, and Sweet Machete perform at Daft Brewing at 7:30. An Elton John tribute show takes place at the Spire at 7:30, and James Gordon performs at Hotel Wolf Island starting at 8:15. That's just a look at what's happening around Kingston this week. Have an event you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. For more details on these events, check out the full calendars on cfrc.ca. Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and listen on the go, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Hey, this is Laura Jane Grace from Against Me, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Hi, and welcome back to Cuban Sounds in Canada, where we explore the music of Cuban and Cuban-adjacent musicians in Canada. I'm your host, Karen Dubinsky. Let's start off with someone we haven't heard from before on this program. Josvani Castañeda is a Toronto-based violinist. He's one of those Cuban graduates of the Los Primos student exchange program in Halifax in the 1990s. In 2018, he released an album, an EP, called La Vision. This song is from this EP. It's called Todo a su Tiempo, Everything in Its Own Time. The Count and the Cuban Cocktail was a Prince Edward Island-based band active some years ago. The Count is Eduardo Mendoza Lopez, who had a musical career in Cuba before moving to Canada. The Count and the Cuban Cocktail recorded an album called Influence in 2014. I'm looking forward to learning more about this group this summer as I head to PEI to explore a little bit more about the Latin music world there. This song is called Ahora Sí Te Gusta, Now You Like It.
Y tú que decías que yo no tenía
Continuing on the East Coast, here's something from New Brunswick-based Dee Hernandez's latest EP, which was released last summer. The song is called Danzón, from the EP Pa que lo pruebes, so that you can taste it. Let's move across the country for a moment and listen to another song from the wonderful band Montuno West. This group is composed of Cuban, Brazilian, Canadian, and Venezuelan musicians, and in 2024 released a really terrific album called Raíces, Roots. Here's a song from that album called Luna Nueva, New Moon. Thank you. Here's an old Latin music favorite, probably covered by just about any Cuban musician who has picked up an instrument and started to sing. This one is a beautiful version by the great duo Ocan from their 2020 album Espiral. The song is Bésame Mucho.